I'm glad everybody's still here. My name is Lynn Wanger, and I'm with RTI International. I work out of the San Francisco office, and today I'm going to present a paper that we've been working on, which we've entitled Opioid Withdrawal and Its Effects on HIV Risk Behavior, a Community-Based Study of People Who Inject Drugs. And I'd like to thank my co-authors, Alex Crowell, Jahira Fajardo, and Scott Novak, as well, and also acknowledge that this is one of the NIDA grant where Scott Novak is a PI. I have no relationships to disclose, financial relationships, but I do need to disclose that I have a flight out of here really soon after this meeting, and so I'm going to like hightail it out really quickly. So that's my only disclosure. I want to first start with a little bit of background and talk about the fact that the symptoms associated with withdrawal are one of the most difficult aspects of opioid dependence. There has been some previous research that shows that during withdrawal, people who inject drugs are more likely to engage in high-risk behaviors, drug use behaviors. And as we have already discussed today, syringe sharing puts people who inject drugs at high risk for HIV and HCV transmission. And syringe reuse is another one that we wanted to look at because that also puts people at risk for soft tissue infections, and there's some understanding that reusing syringes, also barbed syringes, which affects the veins and can affect all sorts of circulatory problems in people's health. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. And although there has been research on withdrawal and risk, there's very little known about how the magnitude of withdrawal symptoms increase risky behaviors. So that is what we're going to talk about today. So the objective of my talk today is to understand how the magnitude of opioid withdrawal symptoms impacts risky injection practices among people who inject drugs. I'll tell you a little bit about our study. This is a community-based study of non-medical use of prescription drugs among people who inject drugs. We were conducting the study between 2011 and 2014. Again, this is a community-based study. In order to recruit our samples, we use targeted sampling. And just a little bit about targeted sampling. It's a really good method for reaching hidden populations like drug users. We use ethnographic data to sort of get a sense of where the drug users are in the city and what kind of drugs people are using. And then we use the information to set quotas within our samples related to things like gender, homelessness, drug use, and the drug types used. And then we employ a very experienced outreach worker to recruit potential participants from those designated areas. To be part of this particular study, you needed to be over 18 years of age. You had to have injected any kind of drug in the last 30 days, and you had to have the ability to provide informed consent. We did quantitative interviews at both baseline and six-month follow-up, and the overall N was 706 participants at baseline, and we had about an 80% follow-up rate at 6 months. I want to let you know that these analyses are limited to the baseline data, and we also limited these analyses to participants who had injected heroin or other opiates in the last 6 months. The outcome variables that we're going to look at are syringe sharing and syringe reuse, and I will define the way we define them in a minute. And then we also use what's called the subjective opiate withdrawal scale. It's a 17-item scale to assess intensity of withdrawal, and there was a range between 0 and 17. We looked at the possible confounding variables as well, gender, age, race, and homelessness. Just to give you an idea of our sample, mostly male, mostly white. And age, you can see there's an older population we usually see in San Francisco, and more than 80% were over 30, and you can see that over 55, 25% of the sample were over 55 years old, and 66% were homeless. In terms of opiate injection or opioid injection, 95% of this smaller sample, 470, injected heroin in the last 6 months, 7% prescription opioids, 51% speedball, and 43% goofballs. And you can also see, in terms of receptive syringe sharing, only 15% of the sample had shared syringes, and in terms of syringe reuse, 46% have reused their syringes. And just the way we define receptive syringe sharing is, in the past 30 days, how many times did you inject using syringes or needles that you know had been used by someone else. And syringe reuse is defined as, on average, when you get a brand new never-used needle, how many times do you inject with it before you stop using it or get rid of it? And a yes to syringe reuse is a response greater than one time. So let's look at the results of the subjective opiate withdrawal scale. As you can see, so this was asked. If the participants said that they had experienced withdrawal symptoms in the past 6 months, we asked them to think about the last time that they had been in withdrawal and tell us which of the following symptoms they had experienced. And as you can see, the majority of the sample you can see that most of the symptoms were reported by a majority of the sample, and we can all kind of agree that these individual symptoms, like diarrhea or muscle aches or vomiting and hot and cold flashes and flushes, would really make a person very uncomfortable. But when you start looking at that in combination, this is what leads people to higher, we might think that this would lead people to higher risk. And what you'll see here is that more than 50% of the sample had experienced 14 to 17 of these symptoms the last time they were in withdrawal. So they feel really crappy. We then looked at, first we'll look at receptive syringe sharing, and then we'll look at syringe reuse. So in bivariate analysis, we found that the more withdrawal symptoms you have, there was a slight increase in the risk of syringe sharing, but this was not statistically significant. But if you also look at identifying as African American, you were less likely to share syringes, and being homeless was associated with increased likelihood of sharing syringes. And then in multivariate analysis, you see that the statistics hold, with African Americans being less likely to share syringes and homeless people being more likely to share syringes. But the withdrawal scale was not statistically significant. But when we look at syringe reuse by participant. In bivariate, you can see that the magnitude of the SAL scale, the withdrawal symptom scale, is associated with syringe reuse, but none of the other variables are. And then in multivariate, you can see that it also, the statistics hold out. There is an increased number of withdrawal symptoms was the only variant associated with syringe reuse. And so, in summary, we can see that, you know, the magnitude of withdrawal was not in this sample associated with receptive syringe sharing. However, it is associated with reuse. And demographic characteristics, including ethnic identity and being homeless, are associated with syringe sharing. Now, of course, there are some limitations to our study. You know, this is self-report data subject to bias and social desirability. It's not a random sample. Thus, we can't generalize to other populations of people who inject drugs. But when you think about San Francisco, when you think about syringe sharing, you must remember that we have had syringe exchange, syringe distribution, pharmacy access to syringes, beginning in 1989. So it seems as if the messages focusing on syringe sharing have been heard by people who inject drugs and have had the impact on drug use behavior even when people are in severe withdrawal. But what I'm thinking we need to focus on is that harm reduction and risk reduction education should focus on the risk of syringe reuse as a way to reduce risk to soft tissue infections and to promote vein care. And so we really feel that any additional risk reduction information can have a profound impact on the health of people who inject drugs, but we need to get that information into what's going on in our interventions that have been happening. And I just want to acknowledge my study team, who without them we would not have these data to look at, and the study participants, who without them my slides would be blank. Thank you. Any questions? About what they know about risk. No, we don't do a knowledge scale. Mm-hmm.
Your symptom scale looked pretty skewed. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people way up at the high end. But your analysis was by number of symptoms.
Yes.
Okay. Did you play around and look at other ways of analyzing the data other than number of symptoms, like doing some median split? split or quartiles or something, then you had a very skewed distribution.
Okay. Not, I have not yet done that. We were trying to get this done by now. Done and on the road. But that's a good idea because it is really skewed. I mean, and even just doing, I did some of the interviewing myself, and it's kind of when you're asking these questions, you're kind of like, is anyone going to say no to anything? I mean,
yeah, I mean, you might want to do a split.
Absolutely.
People with huge numbers of withdrawal symptoms, and everybody who doesn't have huge numbers.
Right, right. Absolutely. We've done a good job around syringe sharing.
Syringe sharing, I see.
While people are in withdrawal, like the thought, like the, and we've gotten a lot of syringes out there, but people aren't really as aware of what the risks of syringe reuse are.
Okay, but with themselves.
Exactly. You're spreading your own infection. You can get abscesses, and you know, cellulitis, and also other vein care issues. I mean, when you think about people who, with collapsed veins all over their body, I think then we have to think about circulatory disease and all sorts of things that are impacting people's health. We done? One more, hand sneaking up. Exactly. There was a lot of, and that was just of the injection opioids. So they were using, so we have a lot of oral use of opioids as well as orally, but we wanted to look at injection risk, and so we didn't want to include them in this part of the sample. It's a big, long survey that we wanted to look at some specific stuff.
Talking about soft tissue infections reminds me of in my medical training at Brooklyn. Were there any people who got infection, heart valve infections?
We didn't ask that question, but it's true. I remember when I was in the early 80s working in methadone, there were a lot more, and in the hospital in San Francisco, just a lot more, you just heard a lot more about endocarditis, and I wonder if people were using the remember when people were using the non-cotton, and that was a big problem as well. I think that may be part of it. But I think people are just using, over the years, safer. But I don't know. We'd have to, like, really look at the clinical records. San Francisco is, it's a different little island, and we have a lot going on there in terms of harm reduction for decades. And, we see it on the two different coasts. We see it in the, a lot of reductions in HIV risk, all in the pockets where we've had this. And it really is important, I think, to say that we have those interventions and that this needs to happen in many, many more places across the U.S., across the world. All right. Thank you. Happy New Orleans Day.